Thank you very much, Lucius. It is the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. It is time now for Krusty's Corner, brought to you by Greystone Roofing. Go to greystone-roofing.com. Here's the king.
Hey, hey, kids! Your old pal Krusty's going to teach you 5 new words.
You're not wrong about that.
From Dallas, Texas, number 55, Brian Waters.
Thank you very much, Lucius. I appreciate you playing that. And thank you, Greystone, for being a part of this one, too. Thanks to my teammates for allowing me to go out there and watch a little OTA practice today. It's nice to get out there. You know what I figured
out?
It's
my pleasure, Brian. You're welcome.
You know, it's standing out in that field.
Yep.
It just tells you how close you are to standing out on the field at Oxnard.
Oh, God, I bet it was a good feeling.
Well, it's a good feeling, but the problem is you're in between two big glass buildings. So it's like being in, you know, it wasn't like terribly hot out there, but
catching the reflections.
Reflections, and then there's not a lot of air movement out there. Just not a lot of air movement.
Was it worse than Valley Ranch, you think?
I tell you, there were some days at Valley Ranch where it was pretty brutal. This one, this was one of those times where I haven't stood outside for a long time, you know?
That yeah, kind
of
oh, thing. Yeah, I know the feeling.
And then
yeah.
All of a sudden, I'm like, I'm trying to squint to look at the other end of the field because Shoddy's kind of got us figured out. I'll tell you, during COVID, we at least got to stand on top of the weight room, and we were 5 feet apart, but we could see high enough, we could see the whole field. So I think next Thursday, I'm going to bring my binoculars. Take that, Shoddy. Yeah, because he was definitely practicing at the other end of the field. But I did mention some things that I did. What are you talking about? The game?
Yes,
playing that
it's
game
20-0 over? Game. I just went 17-3.
Yeah.
First time. I'm trying to get better at this.
20-0.com.
Okay. And you say there's like times where there's like old players show up on this thing, like guys from my era?
You got any era in the history of the league and all the teams, and you randomize both those things. You need to take a player each round until you flushed out a football roster at 20-0.com. But there's a basketball version as well that sort of went viral yesterday.
Oh, good deal.
It's addicting. Well, Chuck, you might want to stay off that.
I know.
I learned that the hard way last night.
I probably need to.
I'll tell you this. They did a red zone goal line work today.
Okay.
Me and Todd Archer determined that if you're doing goal line work during 7-on-7 and the quarterback spins out of there, that's a defensive win.
Okay.
We had some defensive wins today.
Shoddy was even saying it's a weird thing to say, but like defense, you do not have equal say to the football. Like the football is not yours. You know, you've got to pull up. You cannot go full speed here.
Yeah,
that's got to be tough.
Well, they had some guys lining up in the secondary. No Bland, as I mentioned. We all know about the foot. No Thompson either was not practicing. Jalen Thompson wouldn't practice. So I'm trying to. I think by the time we get the show, maybe by the end of the segment, I'll have an answer what he's kind of dealing with right now. But
he was on the cords, looked like, from social?
Yeah, he's on the cords with doing that. So they went with P.J. Locke. They went with Kobe Durant. They went with Caleb Downs. They went with Kalen Carson. Okay. And Malik Hooker was involved as well. So, and what's interesting, and I hadn't seen, and I know maybe you guys had taken a peek too, Kobe Durant. I did not see him for the Rams play much inside at all last year when I was watching his tape. This time around when they went to 7-on-7, he was playing in the slot. So when they went to when they were down in the goal line, red zone area, he was playing as a outside player. And then when they went to the field work, he was playing inside in the slot. And that's something I hadn't seen him do before.
So you think they would like to see if he's interchangeable?
Yeah, I think so. Him and Downs. Downs was playing like the slot. And there were times where Downs was covering the tight end and then Downs was covering the receiver the other time.
And just blanket coverage?
Well, he was. I'll tell you the thing.
Say, yeah.
I'll just tell you what's interesting about Downs. Have you ever stood next to him or been around him?
Sadly, no.
I've dreamed about it.
We've kicked it a little bit.
He's a really it's
small.
He's not as tall as you would think, but he's really stocky.
He's built. I mean,
he's like really he's one of these guys that's like a sturdy looking player. He doesn't look
dense muscle.
Yeah, he doesn't look light. And I'm not saying he's a fat guy or anything like that. I'm saying, Mike, in his uniform.
Yeah, he's filled out.
I was thinking he was probably a little bit taller on film, a little bit more kind of length to him. But he's got some stockiness to him. But I'll tell you what he is. They were working on a drill on the goal line, and what they were asking to do is they were doing these routes where it was where the receiver tries to like start one way and then return and then go kind of a back and forth. Like you have to mirror my man's got some quick feet. I mean, he knows how to stay in position. Like when the receivers were moving along the back line, he was right in step with them. And then the receiver tried to adjust on him, and he just put his foot in the ground and went right back with him. So it's almost like they were tethered together. That's how he was moving. But I didn't realize.
Who was he working against?
He was working. They were working. They were doing drills.
Oh, okay.
They were doing drills, but they were making the receivers. You had to run like.
So he was doing that consistently.
Yeah, he was like the guys were like they were trying to get away from him and. It couldn't get away. He's just the way that he was playing.
You know, the only thing I wonder is if you could play corner, why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Because there's so much more money at corner than safety.
That's a good question for him because I was thinking like I'm wondering now if they're going to do what Seattle does because we did see, like I said, I saw Durant in the slot. So I wonder if
they'll use him more like Nick Emmanuel.
Yeah, they use him like you're not going to play him all the time.
Sure.
In the slot, you can put him at other places, but I wonder if Zach told you there was no Overshown today because he's getting married. So in his place was Shamar James. So it was James and D. Winters were the two starting inside linebackers.
Do you think his fiance said, "Do you love me more than football?" And he said, "Of course I do." And she said, "Prove it."
Yeah.
It's like, okay, we're doing it during OTAs, babe.
Yeah.
Training camp's off the table. Only explanation I can come up with. Not during the season, not during training camp. OTAs.
I think it's an April wedding. That's what you should have done.
They just wanted to get married the same time Peyton Russell was. They wanted to share an anniversary.
Share an anniversary together.
That's the real reason Dawson isn't going.
Joe Milton was the backup quarterback today. And then Sam Howell came in with the threes. So Milton okay. was when Dak went his three
that's
plays.
That's interesting.
And then Joe Milton came in. He was running with the twos.
I think that's a legit QB2 battle right there.
I mentioned we had Ross Wincy on, the national scout. And I asked Ross this question about the running backs. What's that?
You let Wolchek get away with that?
What he said, I didn't hear.
Joe Milton, a legit backup battle with Sam Howell?
Yeah.
You think that's legit?
Or you think it's just Howell's job?
Well, yeah.
They just gave it to Milton to start OTAs. I think Howell's going to win it too, but they're letting Milton get the run right now.
Well, for the media, he was out there. Like I say, they have periods where we don't get to see what's going on. But right now, it was Milton. When they went down goal line, it was Milton was part of that. I mentioned about Ross being on with us today and asked him the question about the running back room, and I was curious because I said, hey, a lot of us in the media think that you need to add another running back. And he was saying, listen, I'm not just kidding you here. He goes, actually, Jadon Blue is getting better.
Let's go.
He's getting better.
And that's music to my ears, dude.
So, and I mean, getting better in the way of
professional
professionalism and stuff.
Like hanging out with Rashawn Gary a little bit.
Yeah, they
he's
a
grown man.
He said that. He goes, listen, I get it. Yeah, that's what he's saying. I get it. I understand why people. It's kind of an unproven group. But they he was pretty adamant about Blue, and he was pretty adamant about Phil Maffa.
I'm a Maffa guy.
Being a part of this, and so. Keep an eye on that. They coming from him, they like their room. So I don't know if they're going to add another running back. It sounds like to me they're going to go into this thing with the running backs they got in their room.
Trust right your now. Draft evaluations. And there's definitely upside with those guys. I mean, for sure. If Jadon Blue can get his S together,
right,
it's going to be fantastic for this offense.
Here's a question for you, because Nick Harris pointed out that Marquez Valdes-Scantling actually got some run with the first team.
He did.
Did he stand out to you in any way?
And not in the point. The guy I noticed was Flannoy.
Okay. Yeah, Todd said Flannoy had a touchdown, which
yeah,
I'm sure
that's,
you saw.
That's the guy who I noticed. I noticed Flannoy, and then Ferguson had a couple of catches, okay. And that's where I noticed him because he was getting covered by Downs. So that's where
those clear out routes. I think you like Flannoy to be a technician, be a possession guy. But I think to what we were just saying about Christian Watson, these teams are obsessed with a guy who can run in the 4.3s to get down the field. Love of the game routes.
Yeah. The I'll tell you what. Another guy that got some work was like I mentioned, Kalen Carson.
Yeah.
And Kalen Carson, there was one time where they were trying to throw the ball. Dak was trying to throw the ball inside. And this is where Scantling, I didn't know the Scantling's number was 11.
Yes.
But this was the one pass that I saw with Scantling, that the ball was behind him and he tried to adjust and he didn't make the catch. But he didn't make the catch because Carson was all over him.
Well, Shoddy did point out, like, unprovoked, Kalen Carson's name as a guy that's been in the facility, has really impressed him. So maybe Kalen Carson, finally, year three, it's clicking for him.
And I'll say this, too. I'm trying not to get excited about those guys.
You're right. Let's temporarily. Yeah. Hey, we'll see. But does it translate to the season?
I like the way that Revelle was moving around. And I'll tell you what, Devin Moore is a long, rangy, good-looking player.
He's your pet cat.
And he moves. I mean, he moves particularly well, moves really well in the drills side. And stuff like that. You would think somebody that tall would have trouble moving.
Yeah.
But he has a real nice feel for this thing. So we'll see. With all the corners they got, Julius Wood actually made a play at safety.
Oh, I forgot all about
that
him.
I saw. And that was kind of what it is. But what I was really surprised is was Durant playing as a nickel player in the slot. I had not seen him do that with the Rams. And so the Cowboys are going to try. And maybe this is where – maybe that's him and Downs are going to be the interchangeable slot players.
Yeah. It looked like they felt like he was a decent option early in his career, but last year they almost stopped entirely.
They stopped. I did not see one game where he was playing, and I think I looked at seven where he was out there playing, and I did not see him.
I think the snap count was 36 in the slot last year.
Okay, well, I obviously he did it, but for the Cowboys, boy, he did it a lot in the practice the other day, or actually today's practice.
Right on. Thanks for the report.
Thank you.
We are off and running with media availability OTAs, it's starting to feel a bit like training camp, like you said, Brian.
You all right back there?
Doing great. Feeling a little something in my throat right now. So.
Oh, whoa. You and Sean both.
Wow, it's supposed to be that strep to whatever.
Yeah, Sean and Peyton with just streptococcus all down their throat.
Yep.
That's what it is. All right, Inside the Star here on 105.3 The Fan. We're going to talk here in just a second about why Micah Parsons said Jerry Jones essentially told him, F you. And right. He told that to none other than Bob Sugar. More on that here in just a second. But first, Drake London Chop is getting a lot of money.
35 a year?
Mm-hmm. And this can go up to like essentially 37 and a half with certain escalators. He can go up to being a $37.5 million a year player. And his career numbers, he's essentially been George Pickens to this point.
Except just numbers wise.
No, but if you look at their career numbers, essentially over the course of their careers to this point, they've put up the same numbers.
Okay. So what does that do for you?
Me, it does nothing. I mean, I'm sure it does something to the market, but...
Boy, this guy hates...
I don't. I really like him.
Peyton, we gotta figure out what's going on here. Are you related to CeeDee Lamb?
No, I'm saying it doesn't do anything. I do love CeeDee Lamb, but it doesn't do anything. It does something to the market. I'm saying I don't think it does anything to move them. I don't think it does anything to move the league. The same reservations that have existed for everybody where they're like, we don't want to pay it. I just think this would increase even further. Yeah, we still don't want to pay it, especially now. It's just keep going up. We're going to wait.
Listen, the Cowboys, my biggest issue with the Cowboys is that they're just like, well, we refuse to believe what we saw. We refuse to believe that what we saw this year was who he really is.
I think you saw who he really is. In fact, here's my contention, and this is the
one we saw exactly the George Pickens experience.
100%
great player who will be late to meetings, who will, you know, be
some quirky stuff.
Yep. But I don't think he's any different than a lion's share of the wide receivers that are out there.
Oh, I think he is, but I think that
they're a little off.
I don't know how much the issues that exist for him. I don't feel like, I could be wrong, I don't feel like they're as damaging as coaches tend to think that it is.
Right.
I think coaches just tend to think like, it needs to be this way, and I've got a certain structure, and he breaks out of the structure, and that's frustrating for me. And that irritates them. And then it's a little bit of old school ball coach mentality.
Of course.
And so.
And then you got Brandon Ayuk over here doing God knows what he's doing.
Well, you saw the poly markets yesterday, right?
I did not.
The poly markets. I don't know. These have been horrible indicators for who's actually going to get who at this point, is what I've noticed. They don't have a great track record of being able to nail it.
They seem to work on elections.
They do not work on free agent moves, because the current favorite to get Brandon Ayuk is the Dallas Cowboys, which would be very surprising to me.
If they get Brandon Ayuk, and are they going to move on from George?
I don't know what
have to, right? You can't keep all three of them.
Well, I don't know what Brandon Ayuk would get right now, because Ayuk's got so many issues and questions surrounding him. But this is Drake London's a good player. Drake London is a leader on that team. Drake London is considered super stable. That's the difference.
Right.
That's why he was able to get his money right now. And I think George Pickens is who he is. And one of the things that we get a lot of conversation about is the idea of, or what's sort of suggested, is, well, if he's doing this now, Chop, what's going to happen when you give him $35 million? How much worse is it going to get? And my contention has always been, I think George Pickens is just thoroughly who he is.
Yeah.
And I don't think if you pay him, it's getting any better or worse. I think he's going to be who he is. I think that some of these quirky things he's got going on, he's always going to be that way, whether he's got money or not. Mm. That's going to be George Pickens.
I think you might be onto something.
And either you feel comfortable with that, which a lot of his teammates are comfortable with it. Most, in fact, I've not heard of a Cowboys teammate who is not comfortable with him. So the teammates are comfortable with it. So that seems to be your answer, but they still have their reservations. And if they think one more year is going to help them get that question answered, well, fine, because I think he's going to be the same guy he was last year in terms of who he is in the culture.
If he goes out there, and let's just say, let's not, I'm not going to say he's going to put up 1,400 yards again. Okay? Let's say he puts up 1,250 on, you know, 83 catches.
Mm-hmm.
So 10 fewer.
And how many meetings is he on time for?
The exact same amount last year.
Okay.
Maybe one or two more or less.
Uh-huh.
Are they not bringing them back?
I don't know. Because it's not about showing it again on the field. That's not what they're asking for. They know he can do it.
Well, I mean, I think then you're going back. We're going
which
backwards.
Which I know is super contrary to the fiber of your bead of how you think a team should be built, is worried about things like that.
Well, I mean,
or worrying about just like tardiness as like, This is where we have to draw the line.
There's got to be a line somewhere with everybody.
For the Chiefs, maybe it's like the eighth car accident,
right? Or 12th.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Who knows? Why not make it 20?
Okay, but then we all in this town said stop with the right kind of guy, RKG, Jason Garrett way.
Oh, there is a case to be made. Brian Schottenheimer is running the Cowboys exactly like Jason Garrett did. He's just doing it with better, like, charisma. But he's been operating it very. A lot of what he says, he doesn't use the terms right kind of guy and do this and that. But everything else he says in between that sounds very similar to Garrett's philosophy.
And listen, I liked Jason. I was fine with Jason. I thought Jason was a good coach.
I thought there was a path forward to where you could have won with Jason if things fell into place the right way.
I agree.
I'm not a fan.
I also thought that it was probably time.
Yes, it was.
Right?
He'd been given enough opportunity.
I also thought it was probably time. But, you know, like, so you can't sit here and say you just didn't like the RKG and then now you love this. I don't know. So Drake London gets 35 a year. To me, that's where George Pickens settles in at or more. I think he's better than Drake London.
Micah Parsons said he didn't need 40. said, I could go with 30, enough for it to get me in a lake house. You remember that quote? Mm. Well, Micah Parsons is talking again, and this time he's talking to Bob Sugar. And if you know Bob Sugar, that is Jay Moore's character from Jerry Maguire. Jay Moore, who's been on the show before, I believe. But Jay Moore's got a podcast, and he, for some reason, had Micah Parsons on. And he wanted to get the scoop on what exactly went down with you in Dallas, Micah Parsons.
When you're negotiating with Jerry, are you meeting with him in his office, having like Whataburger? Like, how is that going?
Me and Jay would talk before. Like, we went to games together. Like, he would treat me just like
one of his favorite players.
Yeah, for real. We talked about anything. I go into his office and he tells me that I'm the future of his team. And
kiss of death right there.
I'm like, cool. This is where I want to be. He goes, but you need to do a team-friendly deal. And I was just like, I do want to be the highest paid. Like, I don't care about how much. Like, I want to be the highest paid player at my position. I have to do it for not just me, but the rest of the league, right?
Yeah.
You know, you got guys like Hutchinson coming after Will Anderson. That could completely throw off the whole market. You got to think about guys that's after you and the future of the league when you're doing these negotiations. And he was like, okay. But, you know, at the end of the conversation, I said, you got to talk to my agent. Like, David has to clear this thing. Like, they send a contract to David. David was like, I wouldn't take this deal. So I wouldn't take the deal.
What was the deal?
Like a 5-year, $200 million.
What was it you didn't like about it?
The structure wasn't good. Like the guarantees, the days, it has a lot to do with, is it fully guaranteed or is that injury guaranteed? What day does your money become guaranteed? People was like, yeah, Jerry offered you to be the highest paid player. You're greedy. But I was like, at the same time, he also said, F me with the structure to deal. Mm. I want the power. I want to control you. And if you notice, majority of his deals that he's done with players, he has full control and leverage.
Okay. Several thoughts there.
Real quick.
Yeah.
I was looking this up. Is that guy's real name isn't Bob Sugar?
No, it's Jay Moore.
No. Who's Micah doing that podcast with?
Jay Moore.
Okay. Because you said Bob. I was like, wait a second. That was a fictional guy. That wasn't.
Yes. I said Jay Moore after.
Oh, you didn't say Jay. No, you said that's who Jay Moore.
Did I say Jay Moore?
No, you said
that. Yeah, he said you guys had him on the show.
I said Bob Sugar. I said, who's Jay Moore? And I said, you guys had him on the show, right?
Right. No. Okay. Because I was sitting there. I was like, wait a second. That was based off of, like, Lee Steinberg. Why would you Okay. All right. That makes sense.
All right.
That makes sense.
That was good. Well, Micah Parsons is talking to Jay Moore, the actor who played Bob Sugar. Micah Parsons there. A few different thoughts. One, him at the end, they're saying, Jerry just wants all the control and all the leverage. Yeah. Every single team wants the control and the leverage of the contract negotiation, Micah. That is how it works. But he's right about 5 years, $200 million is not 5 years, $200 million. It's not. There's ways that it's structured that changes how much that actually is. So Micah's side is right to fight for the structure that they want and the structure that ensures they get as much of that as they're supposed to. The problem is still we have not gotten clarity on what was the intent of that dinner. That'll be one of the fascinating questions we ask for the end of time because their side.
We'll never get the answer to it.
No, we'll never get the answers to who was correct. They are both sticking to their story from now until forever, which is this is what the intent of the meeting was. Mm-hmm. But still, man, that's a little aggressive. Jerry basically said, F me with that structure. It's like, well, you didn't seem too mad about it until like David came back and said not to do it, which that's why you have an agent. That's why you should do it. But still, Micah Parsons, little unhappy, but that's I still think you can hear it in his voice, like when he starts answering that clip. As much as he did that whole run around his house on Instagram right after the trade was done, he's like, I'm free, or whatever he did.
He didn't want to leave.
He never wanted out.
I wish the Mac could get better.
I think if the Cowboys could go back to a year ago, or I guess longer than that now, 16 months ago, I think they do things the same way. Not necessarily end up trading him, but I think they play it out the same way. They will approach it the same way with Mike and with the agent and everything else. I think if Micah could go back and do it again, he changes the way he does it. And he shifts a little bit here or there. He never takes that meeting. He never does this or that. And he ultimately positions himself to have stayed here because he never wanted to. You can still hear him when he talks about Dallas now. This is where he wanted to be. Which he grew up a fan of them. There was no reason to want to leave.
He does. He grew up an Eagle fan.
No, I think he grew up a Cowboys fan. And I think he grew up genuinely like he is a smart guy. And I think he grew up just understanding like what that would mean for his career. if he ended up here. And he knew the power that was behind it. It's not the same as Green Bay. It's just not.
Well, he may think differently if they win. If the Cowboys never win and he wins in Green Bay, he may think differently.
Sure.
And that's the reality.
There's a different gravity, though, in your career when you win as a Cowboy. There just is. Like your post-playing career is different.
It is. Although, like, there's a lot. I mean, basically, like, if you win, period.
If you win enough. If you're Brady.
Yeah.
You have that.
Yeah, there's plenty of guys who win.
Whoever is on the next
Patrick
title.
Patrick Mahomes is going to be Patrick Mahomes right now at this point, regardless.
Right, but Chris Jones on the Dallas Cowboys winning three Super Bowls is totally different. It's a different career.
Totally different.
And that's the thing. The quarterbacks are different, but, man, I think whoever is on that next team that wins a title for the Cowboys, whenever that is, whoever's on that 2023 Ranger squad that pops up and surprises us and, oh, the Cowboys won a title, look at this. Those guys' careers will be different, significantly different than they would have been doing that anywhere else, and that's just because of what that means to the NFL when you win a title as a Cowboy.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. It's time for your Dallas Cowboys news of the day. And we will start with this. The Dallas Cowboys are off today after what was, well, no doubt, a grueling, couple of OTA days, Monday and Tuesday. Worked so hard, they needed the day off today as mandated by the collective bargaining agreement. It's good that they bargained for that because, well, but those last 2 days were tough. Tomorrow, no doubt, is going to be a just brutal practice as well. And Coach Schottenheimer is supposed to speak to the media tomorrow, I assume, about how tough their practices have been.
Mm-hmm.
And pajama camp, as Dan Campbell calls it.
Alec, will you be locked in on the press conference tomorrow?
I'm going to be hanging out with Travis Jankowski, and the World Series trophy, I've been told, is going to be making an appearance as well at Hawaiian Falls in Mansfield.
Dude.
But I will have my phone with a speaker with the Odyssey app, of course.
That is a smart way to do it. The Odyssey app's a fantastic way to listen to the 105 through the fan. I will add this, though. I know, like, the World Series trophy, I've never seen it carried out and set onto the things. It's just always there
whenever
I arrive.
Yeah.
And they're like, you can't even get this close to it. They're like, stay this far away from it, but you can stand next to it, kind of, you know? But
there's no way they would let, like, Jankowski take that down a water slide, right?
Can you ask?
I'll try. I'll give it my best shot.
It's just a piece of metal.
Manfred would be like, go for it.
Yeah, yep. He'd be like, do it a couple times. Let Alec do it. That's what we're hoping happens tomorrow. If there are enough people chanting, maybe they will give in. But
okay.
The other thing I wanted to add was last night, Kevin, when they brought out the Stanley Cup, it just made me realize how cherished that trophy is.
It really is.
How beautiful it is. And how cool of a job it would be just to walk around and carry that thing everywhere. Like, that would just be a cool job. Back to you, Kevin.
I absolutely agree with that. Now, and I was being sarcastic about the importance and physicality of OTAs.
You love OTAs more than anybody. Yeah. Nobody cares about OTAs more than you.
Yes, and one of your best players is not there. So if they're really important. But I guarantee you, here's the question tomorrow. Oh, what do you think about George Pickens not being there? Oh, you know, we've been talking with George every single day. He knows exactly what we're doing. He's working out on his own and, you know, blah, blah, blah.
He's been throwing with Dak.
Yeah, I can almost guarantee you to a word that will be the answer. But that right there shows you the lack of importance of OTAs. One of your best players is not there and everyone's like,
what if Ryan Flannoy wasn't there?
And I would be like, you are pulling a Jacoby Brissett and I think it's going to backfire on you.
What if Marquez Valdez-Scantling didn't show up? How much would that affect his roster
spot? Think it has the exact same effect as the fact that he's there.
That's so mean.
Ouch. So let's talk about that. That might be too far. I'm sorry, Mr. Valdez-Scantling. I just think that your addition to this team has been vastly overrated by some people. But I'm sure you're a great dude, and I hope it works out.
Has it been underrated by me and Alec? So far,
You know what? Might have fallen into your group think where I've underrated it because people overrated it. So let's just point out, does he have a shot to maybe kind of sort of be the fifth receiver? I guess.
Potentially.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's definitely got to beat out Jonathan Mingo.
If you think that's a massive move, then rock on.
We'll
I hope you're right.
Yeah, we'll talk about that at another time. All right.
Hopefully
we can
not.
Definitely die.
All right, so I'm sorry. That's why. That was unnecessary. You know what? It's not Friday.
Though.
I would like to ask for forgiveness from Marquez Valdes-Scantling.
Shout out Friday.
At least two of those comments were unnecessary. Now, let's talk about an extension for a Steelers player and how it could make a difference for the Cowboys. I know you're like, hold on.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean? So, Nick Herbig... That's what I'm going to go with. He signed a 4-year, $100 million contract. What's interesting about this contract specifically is he got $42 million guaranteed. He is the first non-quarterback ever to get a $100 million contract without starting an entire NFL season.
Oh, really?
So, bravo! Good for him. A lot of projection there. But... what is more important than that for just potential Cowboys, something to look at, is what does this do to the spot of Alex Highsmith?
Mm-hmm,
and I think that's a question in general. And I know this is a player that, look, if you're at least going to like kick the tires and look into something, is this not the player you would be interested
in? Yeah, I don't know exactly what like the value is going to be. The Steelers are actively listening to trade offers for him, though. And they aren't like aggressively shopping, but they're like, hey, we would be interested in seeing if you would like to acquire this player from us for something. His contract, base salary, $14.5 million and 15 and 27, 15 and a half and 27.
And that's what it would,
reasonable value for a linebacker.
And that's what it would be because you're not going to be on the hook for the restructure or the signing. So think about it like this. 2 years, $30 million. If for any reason it didn't work out for you, the dead cap hit is only $5.6 million after that. So it is not a major financial investment.
Mm-hmm.
You would have to do a little bit of wiggling to make it work for your cap, but I feel as though you could accomplish that.
The way I looked at it is, I think it's John Ownwell, most of the offseason was like, I would love Herbig. We could call him Herbie if you want to. The G's kind of silent.
Okay,
sounds like a Y.
I kind of do.
But he was like, this guy fits exactly what I want. I want this kind of dude on the outside that can do a lot of these different things. Alex Highsmith in 2022 had 14.5 sacks. Last year had 9.5. Seven and six in that time being, but he can play across. He can play all over the place when it comes to that spot. He can fill it up on the tackles as well, but he can play at a variety of positions for you, but also get the pressure that you'd like to have off the edge. So, and this is a dude also that comes from a very well disciplined defensive structure that I like. You know, you want guys that have that kind of experience. He's 28 years old, has a couple years left. He's not 30 with no years left on his contract.
Right.
So he's 28 with a couple years left on his contract, just in time to be done with that and move on. You know, whenever maybe your defensive coordinator is done with you and moving on, because at some point Christian Parker is going to be like, I'm
Let's
a head coach now, guys.
He's that good.
But like, and you're still looking for depth at some of these positions and high-level starters at some of these positions. And when you start thinking to yourself, okay, is this going to take up a progress-stopping position? You discussed this a lot yesterday. This team does not have the leeway to say, we're going to hope a player turns into a stud.
Mm.
The best thing to do with quarterbacks, if you have the ability to do it, let them have the clipboard for a year. Wouldn't you love that your rookie first-round pick gets involved in your defense, but also doesn't get exposed by the NFL because he's not quite necessarily ready for it yet? All right, at that position, gets a year under his belt, and all of a sudden becomes a stud. I don't think he's going to be T.J. Watt right out of the gate, but I think that your rookie first-round pick, Malachi Lawrence, is going to have some really good opportunities in front of him. But if there's a better player in front of him, take advantage of the better player.
So can I ask you a question about another player and where he fits with all of this?
Okay.
Not necessarily in the exact same spot. Does James Houston still have a spot on this team? Because I was kind of thinking about the depth chart and looking at, like, contractually, it's not an issue. And that's one of the reasons I think he would have a spot on this team is minimal cap hit, like $1.1 million. But where does he fit in the rotation of this team? And is
Who needs Micah? We have James Houston.
Yeah, that was said. And you,
there was one game when it felt like that came true.
I feel like you stand by that right now. I think you've stood by that and gone, "Hey, go look at the numbers."
He makes 1/40th of Micah Parsons. So, do you think Micah's 40 times as good as James Houston?
Jeez,
maybe you do.
Let's look for a minute at your left outside linebackers: Rashawn Gary, Malachi Lawrence, Maris Leafile, and Isaiah Land. Okay. Some people loved Isaiah Land. Remember that? They're just like, he's going to be a stud. You're like, okay.
It's the trap we fall into every year, and I've fallen into this trap for sure. You talk about and argue for a player that's going to be so important, and then he's fourth string maybe.
Yeah, and then you look at the other side, and you got Donovan Ezeraku, James Houston, Sam Williams, and Tyrus Wheat. I still love the ability to add some players in the mix. James Houston is a... From everything we saw last year, he was a situational pass-rushing outside linebacker, and that was it. Ezeraku showed that he got better at the run game throughout the season, but his best quality was his pass rush in pass rush down situations. I think, Kevin, he's a backup. I think Sam Williams has more potential in him than I do James Houston. So I think you keep him, and you do everything you can to figure out ways to get him onto the field.
Okay.
But if you add another player to this mix, that does take away some opportunities for a James Houston in the conversation. I think he definitely has a place in the rotation. He, you know, but they don't have a war daddy per se at the moment, and I don't know that they're going to try and add one at the moment.
Yeah,
either.
And so I guess I just keep thinking about it from the perspective of, obviously, salary cap-wise, it doesn't do anything for you, but I wonder, like, since you were talking about some of those people, like, does it slow down the opportunities for Williams or Lawrence, or even if you want to throw in Overton or something like that, that maybe you have higher expectations for their future, although I guess Sam Williams probably kind of falls into that group. He's about the same age as James Houston.
Do you care about that, though? Being serious about this, looking at this team and saying, does it slow down the progression for them?
I do on some of the players, just because the way the NFL has gotten now is the second that you draft, let's just say Lawrence and Overton, the clock is ticking, right? And you've got 4 years of Overton, 5 years of Lawrence at a relatively cheap price.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to, like, you see so many baseball teams succeed on those arbitration guys or pre-arbitration guys, like playing way under their salary. And I think that the Cowboys front office can't compete at the same level as the rest of the NFL. So sometimes I do default to those young players because I'm like, hey, you're going to make nothing.
And the Rams seem to be a... Here's the positions that matter us. Because for the longest time, Broadus has told
right.
us it's quarterback, guy that gets to the quarterback, guy that protects the quarterback.
Right.
Well, the Rams are telling us it's quarterback, guy that gets to the quarterback, because Aaron Donald was one as well, and cornerback. Jalen Ramsey, now right. Trent McDuffie. So they're saying those are the three most valuable pieces. We are willing to spend money there and not willing to spend money elsewhere because we're going to hit on these cheap pieces, Puka Nacua being, you know, not the first round overall, making all this ton of money kind of guy.
Jared Verse wasn't making a lot of money either. But I think the Rams just have a fundamentally different idea, right? Like, so they think we can win in the next 2 years. Let's screw the cap in 28, 29,
or
whatever.
Are they screwing the cap? Because they're telling you, we're not going to pay these other guys.
Sure.
But we're willing to pay these positions and these stars because they're the top five player at that position.
I think with the way they've set up a couple of contracts, it does have the potential to kind of screw their cap. But you're right. They've already planned 4. Maybe that means you let this person go, or then again, do you care if you want another Super Bowl? Where it feels like every single year the Cowboys are like, hey, I hear you, but do you know in 2 years how good we'll be salary cap-wise? Do you know how good we'll be in 4 years by taking this exact approach? And I'm like, I don't care.
I don't care about your salary cap or your value.
Yes.
I care about, do you have the talent on the team right now to win this year?
Go all in to try to win a Super Bowl. Maybe not this season, but like next season. Go all in, try to win a Super Bowl. And if that means you're going to be terrible in 28 and 29, at least you gave it a damn shot.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen plenty of terrible Cowboys teams, but they didn't always come off the back of a Super Bowl hopeful.
It's kind of that feeling of always, and listen, I loved the draft this year. I really do like the draft, and I'm hopeful that it's good. But it kind of is the feeling of we're always trying to build it the way that Jimmy did, using all those draft picks
right.
to build a dynasty.
Sure.
And sometimes I don't know if there is a real dynasty right now. Like, the Rams aren't a dynasty. They just keep rebuilding themselves every few years into something. And they have the quarterback to do it, and they're probably going to go trade for Joe Burrow later and say, you know what, because quarterback matters.
I could see that.
But then again, I mean, like you pointed out with the NBA, there's so many different, such a variety of ways that it's been won lately. And I know the Chiefs had their dynasty because they had the quarterback. They had a guy that could get to it. They had a couple of other pieces. That was it for them. It's the building team is always difficult, but whenever you are the Cowboys, their philosophy is let it grow into something. But what if those prospects don't grow into it? Then you have to supplement somehow, and they aren't willing to supplement.
Facts.
All right, it's time now to chat Cowboys football with Nick Harris, Star Telegram here on The Fan. And a good afternoon, Nick. How the heck are you?
Doing fantastic, fellas. How are y'all?
Doing wonderful. Just enjoying the Beats coverage of these OTAs. And, I mean, let's start with left tackle. It sounds like a legit camp battle, and that's something that I'm not used to seeing with the Cowboys. It's like if you're a first-round pick, you're locked in there. They're going to give you every opportunity. But I guess this is kind of a good sign they're making him earn it to me. But what are the chances you think legitimately that Tyler Guyton could lose his starting spot here?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that they're high. You know, I still think if you look at the film last year compared side by side from Tyler Guyton and Nate Thomas, I still think Guyton had the clear upper hand. But, you know, it also could be a situation where it's like, hey, this is the first full offseason that they have with Nate Thomas to understand that he is a left tackle. Because if you remember this time last year, they were still trying to figure out what position he was best at. But now it's like, hey, they like the power of Nate Thomas on that left side. They're trying to increase the strength with Tyler Guyton on that left side. And, you know, we'll see what ends up happening at the end of the day. I still think, though, if you ask me, I think Guyton will be the starting left tackle week one.
Can Guyton still hit, like, I don't know, whatever you think his ceiling would be? Or are we just fighting to try to be average and sufficient as a starter here? Or I guess the right question is there still significant upside for Tyler Guyton?
Yeah, I don't think his ceiling changes. I think especially with a guy like Tyler Guyton, you know, he is, probably 6 years that he's only been playing on the offensive line. And so, you know, there's still going to be some growth and development that he has to do. It's just, you know, how steep is that development trend going to be? Is it going to be, you know, this slow, steady pace that we've seen over the course of the last 2 years? Or can he, you know, expedite that a little bit? I think that's what they're trying to get out of him, and they want it in a consistent manner. You know, consistency is the key word that Schottenheimer throws out whenever he wants more from younger guys, and he threw that one out there in talking about Guyton yesterday, and I think Guyton understands it pretty well, and he's been consistent this offseason. But again, he's going to have to stay healthy. You know, that's something that's not necessarily in his control, but you know, that's going to be a big deal for him in training camp because he hasn't had a fully healthy training camp yet through his first two camp seasons in Oxnard. And then after that, it's about staying consistent on the field as well.
So it's pretty clear out there already, Christian Parker's implementing some disguise.
Yeah, it did not necessarily seen from our standpoint. All we saw at practice yesterday were 7-on-7s in OTAs. But you know, talking to Brian Schottenheimer, talking to the receivers, it's clear that the disguise element is a big deal are a big part of what Christian Parker's trying to implement on the defensive side of the ball. You know, and there's been elements of that under Vic Fangio and Vance Joseph, you know, that Christian Parker most likely has gleaned from, as well as Mike Elko going to Texas A&M. But, you know, we're starting to see that slowly manifest on the field, or at least they are. And I'm excited to see what that looks like with my naked eye.
What was something that stood out for you, whether it was in practice or maybe in the locker room from the DB room?
Yeah, again, tough to kind of point to, but I would say the rotation at corner is certainly notable. It looks like they're giving all these guys opportunities with that first team unit just to get comfortable, and I would expect that to continue into Oxnard. And then we'll probably look up midway through training camp, and we'll start to see, you know, a couple of guys maybe starting to earn more of the first team reps, and rather it being split. But whether it's Kobe Durant, Savone Revel, even Kalen Carson has gotten quite a bit of reps, and he was committed by Schottenheimer yesterday for how he's attacked this offseason program early on. You know, it's going to be a heated battle in that cornerback room for who's going to be the other outside corner. You got Deron Bland. I think he's a near lock as long as he stays healthy. And then that other spot, it's up for grabs. It's going to be a good competition.
Is Durant going to be kind of interchanging a little bit in the nickel spot, you think?
Yeah, and in fact, we saw that a little bit yesterday, and I would expect that from him and even Kalen Carson to be, you know, toyed with a little bit more. I caught up with Kalen in the locker room and be like, how much are they working you inside versus outside? He's like, it's a lot more outside than it was this time last year, but I still am getting some inside work. And so I think right now this is a perfect time in the offseason just to train guys in multiple spots. And continue to do so in the first couple of weeks out in Southern California. And then it allows not only for them to have the flexibility into the season if they have to challenge some of that depth, but also it gives them multiple, you know, chances to throw these guys in starting positions.
Nick, am I reading into too much? They handed you and I a roster yesterday, and Donovan Ezeraco was listed as a defensive end. Am I reading into something? Is he going to play the Gary position, or is he going to play outside linebacker stuff?
Yeah, I think it's more so interchangeable. I wouldn't put too much stock into that just because it's, you know, I don't think it's necessarily like pointed out, but, you know, different people make those rosters versus the ones who actually make like the coaching decisions, you know, but I think they're both going to be outside linebackers, mostly in stand-up type roles, rushing the passer. I wouldn't expect to see Donovan Ezeraco with his hand in the grass more than I would a Rashawn Gary, and I still think Rashawn Gary is going to be a stand-up guy mostly.
And but also on that list too was like James Houston, Sam Williams, all these guys. I mean, it's I can understand a guy like Overton and things like that and Gary, but it was kind of just funny that they had him divided up in linebackers and defensive ends, but they had him. And I was just kind of wondering, are they thinking about Ezeraco more of a, as maybe that type of guy like the Gary position? But I trust what you're saying.
Yeah, that's interesting too. You know, it's definitely food for thought, I think, moving forward. And again, it kind of goes back to the previous conversation of, you know, a lot of this is still so fluid, and they're training guys in multiple spots, and, you know, they'll see what actually that looks like by the time they get to week one. But it wouldn't surprise me when Ezeraco's healthy and he gets out there, they train him in the spot as far as the outside linebacker stand-up role, the defensive end, hand in the grass, you know, go, you're right there at the point of attack on the line of scrimmage. But it's I wouldn't put too much stock into it right now.
Nick Harris with us here in the G-Bag Nation. It's one practice, but you've got to see Zim, you've gotten to see DQ, and then, of course, what we had last year with Matt Eberflus. But did you notice any difference in the way Christian Parker kind of runs the practice or maybe some of the drills?
Yeah, it's not too – you can't really pull anything, I think, tangible from it quite yet. But I will say there was a point, and I think, Brian, you mentioned it on one of your shows as far as it was Savone Revel. He was running through a drill like right in front of us and didn't do it 100% correctly, and he was told, hey, run it again and do it this way. And you know, we've seen that before, but it was, you know, and he corrected it, he did it right. I just thought it was notable, you know, as far as, you know, this coaching staff is still getting to know these guys, but hey, every little thing, and even in an OTA practice in the middle of June on a Thursday afternoon, you know, they want to make sure that they're doing everything right. So, you know, nothing too tangible. I don't think there's any really stock to put into anything we see from the defense until I think week four, week five. I mean, I think, you know, Christian Parker is a great hire by all stretches. And on paper, it looks like it's going to be the correct hire. But, you know, you won't really truly know what that looks like until you have a good sample size once the season starts. Once he tastes blood a little bit, gets hit in the mouth, how does he respond? How does that unit respond? You know, I feel confident in that unit. I will say a lot more confident than I did with this unit last year. But, you know, we won't really know until we get to that point.
Nick Harris, Star Telegram here with you. This team could really use a great second year from Savone Revel. What have you been able to observe or report on?
Yeah, the brace is off. That's first and foremost. And he's super excited about that. And he's a lot more confident. He's been working with Clay Mack, a local defensive backs trainer here in the Dallas area this offseason, and looking forward to being able to translate what he's done there onto the field. But these guys can't really do a whole lot in this part of the offseason. Schottenheimer put it perfectly yesterday. The defense does not have the right to the ball. And so they have to be, you know, they're more so focused on, like, technique things rather than, you know, playing their matchup. And so he's really looking forward to when they can actually press on their assignments, and he can use his links to his advantage. We won't see that until Oxnard when the pads come on, obviously, but he's itching to get to that moment. They've worked a lot more off-cover stuff, and it's something that he's trying to develop into his game. And I honestly think this is a really important time of the offseason for that exact reason, you know, be able to, you know, sharpen those tools that, you know, could really help him be a well-rounded corner. But I see a little bit more speed. I see a little bit more flexibility and dexterity. I think, you know, he's trending in the right direction, but, man, that's a highly competitive room right now, and he's going to have to earn that other spot if he wants to be a starting corner this year.
Nick, are you buying in on the confidence that they seem to have in Jaden Blue?
Yeah, that's another fascinating one. I will mention as well Phil Maffa, man. Phil Maffa's earning a lot of praise behind the scenes as well. Had someone tell me yesterday, night and day different than, you know, from this point last year with Phil Maffa. And so, you know, that's fascinating. Jaden Blue, I was told, has been super locked in, more locked in than he's been in the time that he's been in Dallas. And even in the locker room, he was on his iPad the whole time going through stuff, going through film of the practice that had just happened, you know. And so that's good to see, you know, with a guy like Jaden Blue for sure, after, you know, some of the consistency issues that, you know, Schottenheimer talked about last year, both on and off the field. You know, I guess you could say I've had a little bit of concern this offseason about what the running back room looks like behind Javonte Williams, but I don't get that the building shares that same type of concern, and their draft strategy, their free agency strategy tells you that. And, you know, they feel pretty confident about what that competition looks like behind Williams, and they're ready to roll with it into Oxnard in preseason.
What are the roles of these off-ball linebackers look like? You know, when they moved Leofau early in the offseason, I don't know when they announced that or when it was reported on, but I thought, okay, he's just one step from being gone. We're going to try a last shot here at edge. But then Ross Winchie was on with Brian and Vach yesterday. I'm sure you might have seen that as well. But, you know, he seemed to have confidence that this is setting up Leofau to, you know, to be good. So I guess you might lose him out of that room. So how do you like these other guys to emerge, and what do you think their roles are going to be?
Yeah, and I think the thing with Leofau too, I think you'll see kind of a hybrid role with him. I think he still will do some off-ball. He will still have some off-ball responsibilities, but this is going to kind of maximize, you know, that athleticism around the edge on a more frequent basis. You know, and I think of it about like Jayshon Barham, right? They've come out and said, hey, he's going to be an off-ball linebacker, but there's still going to be scenarios where he's lined up as an outside linebacker rushing the passer. And so I kind of see it as inverse, you know, as if Barham is 70% off ball, 30% on, then Leofau would be the interchangeable on the other side, the vice versa. And so that's kind of how I view that. But as far as these responsibilities for the off-ball guys, if we're talking like D. Winters or DeMarvian Overshown or a Curtis Robinson, Shamar James, there are going to be a lot of responsibilities when it comes to just playing downhill. They don't want, you know, these gashing running lanes to be able to be created. And they have really good defensive tackles in front of them, so they're going to have a lot of help up front. But that's going to be responsibility number one, is making sure everything stays in front of them. And then as far as passing responsibilities go, they're going to have a lot of help from that secondary. That secondary is going to take on a lot more responsibilities under Christian Parker, whether it be Malik Hooker, Jalen Thompson, Caleb Downs. You know, those are guys that are really going to be able to help out that second level and not put so much on their plate from a coverage standpoint. Last year, there was way too much on their plate. I think everyone can see that just from watching any game last year. I think the Carolina game probably points that out more than any when it comes to the linebackers. But it's going to be fascinating to see how that develops and the load that they actually do put on their plates at the end of the day.
Nick, do you think that there will be another move made between now and camp, or we probably won't see like a substantial move for a player that can really contribute until maybe we're out there in practice?
Yeah, I checked in post June 1, and doesn't sound like there's anything, you know, too major in the works, or even if you want to say like a medium impact, it doesn't sound like there's anything like that in the works right now. I think where they are, they're going to go into camp with the guys that they have and, you know, look up after a couple of weeks. And if there's a position group that they don't feel good about, then maybe that's when they start looking around. But for all measures, I think they're ready to roll in with this group. And any additions you see between now and camp will be for depth reasons.
Have you had any eval opportunities or anything popping out anecdotally with the rook Caleb Downs?
Yeah, it's continuing to get a lot of rave reviews. And yesterday, specifically from Rashawn Gary, he got rave reviews, as well as Quinnen Williams. And, you know, Quinnen Williams, he understands, you know, he came from Alabama. I mean, granted, Caleb Downs came from Ohio State, but started at Alabama. He understands, you know, what it takes to go from one championship program and into the NFL and take that with you. And he was commending him up and down. So was Tyler Booker. That was a former teammate of his with the Crimson Tide. It's tough to find anybody who can even find one negative about what Caleb Downs has done so far. They've thrown a lot of responsibilities on his plate. I mean, he was with the first team defense yesterday, and even if we go back to like Tyler Guyton's rookie year, we all knew that he was going to be the starting left tackle, but they eased him into that role, you know. And there's no easing period for Caleb Downs. It's like, all right, go play the slot and be ready for it. You know, go cover Kevontae Turpe and Ryan Flannoy and take on that matchup. And you know, so far he's continued to answer that challenge.
Nick, we'll probably talk to you before we get to training camp again, but I was just kind of wondering what your thoughts are going to be about going to camp. As a reporter, I feel like there's times where we get fooled by this team. Are you to that point where you're like a little bit, you know, I'm going to be a little bit more measured. I'm just going to try and evaluate things. How's your attitude getting ready for this camp?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. I was just talking about it with Clarence Hill yesterday. I was like, yeah, I got to reframe how like my brain works at training camp this
year.
No
question. No question.
If you had asked any of us at the end of camp last year, hey, who are your training camp standouts? We would have said like Kair Elam, Jack Sanborn, Tyler Guyton, Jaden Blue, and oh my gosh, like miss. And so, it's an interesting one because I think there is still stock you can take in it at the end of the day. There was a take that we had coming out of training camp last year being like, hey, Turpin's going to be more involved in the offense, and that ended up being true. And so I think there are things you can take from it, but it really doesn't matter until you get to like week four. Once you have that sample size, I think that's when you can really start drawing big conclusions like that. But, you know, training camp is still super valuable, especially for these young players. It's going to be really cool to see the one-on-ones with guys like Malachi Lawrence, Rashawn Gary, Ezeraku going into year two. Excited to see what that looks like. But, yeah, definitely a different mindset for your boy going into Oxnard.
Terrific stuff, Nick. Appreciate you here on a Football Friday. Have a great weekend. Chat soon.
Hey, thanks, fellas. Y'all have a good one.
Salute. There he goes, Nick Harris, Star-Telegram Cowboys beat writer.
The great Bobby Belt.
Bobby knows ball. Hey, let's talk ball. We're the ball knowers and we just talk ball.
Not so fast. John Machota says, uh-oh. I don't know ball. And it's Sean who knows ball.
Yeah!
More on that in just a second here in Below the Belt, which is sponsored by Window Nation. Before we get into that, I need to eat the tacos that Chicolina's running around here, I guess. But that's the...
You're not going to eat them before.
I need to. Like, I mean, although, I don't know, this is the... there's like a salsa here, and it's got like little seeds in it. So I think this is going to burn my mouth if I take a bite.
Both of those salsas look very good, but dangerous.
Yeah, no, I'm dangerous. A little concerned, but I'm ready to dive in. All right, before we go to why I'm an idiot and Sean knows ball, allegedly... from The Athletic. Cowboys OTAs are going on right now. Not a whole lot that you can glean from this, you know, early on. You're more just looking at, like, who's out there and available, who is, you know, how are certain guys moving, how are they running practices. The way Christian Parker ran the practice yesterday and ran them through defensive drills is not like anything I've ever seen. could be good, could be bad. I really don't know. Could be neutral. You know, you just see it, though, and you do immediately tell it's different, but it's structured, and it's a clear vision of what he wants it to be, and he's completely in control. Because they would basically have them rotating at these different drill setups. Usually you just see the defensive linemen stand here on the field. The defensive backs stand here on the field. They all do their little drill work, and then they work together as a team. Well, this was like them rotating their drill positions and Christian Parker orchestrating everything. It's a really tight schedule, too. Like, it's very clearly like, you go here, you go here, you go here. Everybody knows where they're supposed to be. Coaches are all setting up the drills for them and letting them know, all right, here it is, here's the drill. Caleb Downs, very vocal at this practice. Very, very loud and, like, not in any sort of, like, a competitive way of, like, you know, barking at somebody after play, but just very vocal in terms of like communicating with guys, hey, we need to be doing this, we need to be doing this. And I realized when I said that earlier at 6:20, I was like, that may sound a little like, also like, it may be easy if you're a veteran to be like, oh, this know-it-all, like, oh, he just knows that he's going to come in here and tell me what to do. But it didn't have that energy at all. It literally just came across as he has an understanding that other guys may not have right now, and he is very quick to just, if something needs to be said, I will tell somebody how to do it. And I think it's really clear to tell he's going to be the vocal leader on that defense really fast. It may not be this year because it's just hard when you're a rookie, but his career will be spent. We will think of him as that is the guy. That's the guy in charge on that side of the ball.
Have you found that when a rookie does that, it creates kind of like pushback from the vets?
Nope. Last guy that did it was Dak. When Dak came in, Dak was in control. Now, Dak made it was about us. It wasn't about him. But Dak was very much, guys, we can do this. I'm in charge. Steady hand. Like, that's what got him the job over Romo.
Malik Hooker and P.J. Locke were the first team safeties, with Jalen Thompson working with Britt Brown, Caleb Downs, and Kobe Durant, first team reps at slot corner.
Yeah, and P.J. Locke said that he and Caleb Downs have been getting an extra work after every single practice. That they've been out there working and spending time getting things down. And PJ Locke sounded really excited yesterday about how this defense is looking and how they're going to work together. And so there's a lot of encouragement. Now, before we talk about what an idiot I am for my rankings, I think we should talk about how
there was a badass quote, by the way, from Schottenheimer on Rashawn Gary. Said he's been blown away by Gary's professionalism. He's a grown-ass man.
A grown-ass man. Said it without a smirk, too. I thought he was going to say it and chuckle a little. He did not. He just went, he's a grown-ass man. So I definitely clipped that I'm going to use for meme purposes in the future, like when Jalen Brunson goes off and Victor Wembanyama-Simmons is doing nothing in the fourth quarter. But there was one moment that made me look like a football genius during Brian Schottenheimer's press conference, and it is when he said, Tyler Guyton does not have the starting job right now.
Because we have to believe what they say.
No, but I'm just saying that all we can go by is what he says at the moment, which is what he's saying is exactly what I said.
And you really would have looked like a genius if you knew to play the audio cut.
I think it's different, to be honest with you. I think, you know, usually you have a pretty good sense by year three. But, I was around Rich Gannon when he was a backup in Kansas City, year six or seven, been through Minnesota, different places, and next thing you know, the guy's playing in Super Bowls and winning MVPs. And each position's different. That's a quarterback. What I will say with Tyler is, you know, Tyler understands the importance of this year. Why? Because it's the next year, and we're going to make Tyler earn it. You know, Tyler and Nate Thomas right now are competing to start at left tackle. Why? Because we think that that's going to get the best out of Tyler Guyton and the best out of Nate Thomas. And Tyler's biggest thing is the consistency has not been there. Very talented, maybe one of the most athletic, big men I've ever been around, with his ability to kick, slide, punch, move, run. But there's got to be more consistency. And that's been the challenge that he's been working extremely, extremely hard on. And I was in here the other day, and Saturday morning I had to stop in and get a couple things. And there was really two guys in the building, Phil Maffa and Tyler Guyton.
They want him to win the job. They think he should win the job if he handles what he does, but he is not. You heard it there from Schottenheimer. He's not been consistent enough to rely on that he's going to do it. So they're saying it's open, and this is it. You're not going to be given a starting job this year. You have to go win a starting job.
I'm not going to fight with you for the third day in a row.
Yeah, because you're wrong. Ultimately, we just got the answer, and Brad Schottenheimer said right.
You're not right.
I'm right.
Just because the coach doesn't tell you the truth all the time.
Yes, he does. It's Brad Schottenheimer. He tells us the truth every day.
Last thing, and then we're going to move on. What is the premise of the argument? Give me the
Chapman
give me
says he owns the job currently and can only lose it. Not that he has to win the starting job.
You don't have to beat me. I have to beat you to get the job. Right? Like if everything is equal.
He just said he has to earn it. He has to go win it.
That's coach speak. If they both perform the same, they're going to give it to the person who is the first round draft pick,
yeah,
the front runner.
That part's true.
If they both perform the same, that means Thomas played above and Guyton continued to show inconsistencies that Schottenheimer just said would keep him out of the lineup.
What if Guyton plays well and Thomas plays above what he's supposed to?
Then they would put Thomas in. They would say Thomas is the one showing growth and that Guyton is not. They would say Guyton's showing the same problems that we said would cost him his job here.
I think they're just trying to put Tyler Guyton on public notice, and we shall see. He will start the first game.
He will because he's going to win it. He's going to be better. But if he's not, then he won't. It will be meritocracy, as Tony Romo said. All right, John Machota has the rankings of the Cowboys position groups right now, and he says, you know, wide receiver is number one, quarterback is number two. Brian Broaddus yesterday, very, very impressed with one Ryan Flannoy. And so you throw that in with Pickens and Lamb. Yeah, very easy argument to say that wide receiver is the best position on the team now. Quarterback, two, he's already got safety at three and defensive line at four. So in one offseason, we've done enough to flip two defensive positions up near the top of the list. But you go down the list and you're looking a little further and you go, I don't see a position that I don't think is nearly as big of a problem as everybody else does. And then you get down there and you see number 10, cornerback.
Yep.
Cornerback below special teams. Like, he made sure to throw special teams in there as a position. And so he's got special teams, and then it's cornerback there at number 10. And, Sean, you have said routinely, this is what you are most concerned with and what you are most afraid of.
And Choppy has been worried about it as well. So this is 2-for-2 with us against Bobby this week.
Literally, Brian Schottenheimer just said I was right.
He did. Because you would have been fine with them drafting corner in round one. Now, yesterday, you wanted to see Deron Bland and Savone Revel at practice or get a feel for what their availability was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
What did you get?
So Deron Bland was on resistance bands the whole time. So he was not out there participating. In fact, when we were getting ready, it made it sound like there would be no Bland. It made it sound like maybe there would be some just lighter working back for Revel. We knew that Easy was not going to be out there and found out DeMarvin Overshown was going to be there due to his wedding. But what you ended up getting was Deron Bland on the resistance bands and Revel being out there and moving better than he did last year. But I also think still trying to find the comfortable level for him. Now, they're also not going to have you work like you're in, you know, training camp full pads type of like exerting of energy. So like you're not going to see that from Revel. So part of it could just be the ramp up and that he's going with. But yeah, I think that when this gets back to it, he's going to be 100% like Revel is in terms of his health.
Yeah.
The question is just going to be, is between the ears 100%? Does he feel comfortable? Has he gotten in his head at all about the injury? Michael Gallup was 100% before his head was 100%. And that's what ultimately robbed him of having confidence in his knee. It's a little bit like what we talked about in terms of splitting hairs, I guess, with the discussion of Kyrie Irving and Kyrie saying what was the status with his knee, where there was a lot of people who said, he's saying he's healthy, but he's not mentally there yet. It's like, well, doctors could clear you and say you're good to go. And Kyrie could say, I don't feel like it.
Yeah.
And in my head, I don't feel like it. And if I don't feel like that in my head, I don't feel comfortable and I don't feel confident. That's where Revel was at last year. Revel was healthy enough to play. He just was not there yet in terms of mentally feeling comfortable being out there.
And let me say this. While I am worried about corner, the positive in my concern is I do have intrigue. Now, I definitely feel better about corner now that you have Downs there, where Downs is going to be playing corner. But I have hope that Bland can return. I have hope. I'm trying to be optimistic that Revel, with the injury stuff in the past, is the guy that they drafted. I have hope and optimism with a brand new addition in Kobe Durant. So it's not hopeless there. Like, I have much more hope at corner than I do at linebacker.
Yeah, now, Now, D Winters changes the equation for me a little bit, because I do think D Winters is...
He's an adult?
He's an adult. He's somebody who has shown consistency and somebody who I think plays a certain way that they like. And if they're going to play Jayshon Barham at linebacker instead of kind of a hybrid edge, I think he's better at that position. And that makes me at least feel a little bit more comfortable. If Overshown's health is there, there's just so many... How does Barham get used, and how does Overshown look healthy wise? Those equations kind of make it unbalanced. But
I just went 80-2.
No, was that the first time you did it? was that the first one?
No,
damn it! Okay,
I just set my record to 79-3.
So you're still behind though. But this is one of those things.
What
where
we need is a fan cam
just on this.
On this. To run on the side.
I have to figure out a way to turn this into a game on the air. I don't know how we're supposed to figure out.
How do I put this on like a TikTok? We're like, you know, like it scrolls. It'll scroll for you.
Yeah. That's what you need. So, no, I think it is just one of those things where the linebackers just have more questions that need to click into place. But there's more sure upside in that group. And I just went 69-13. So.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. It is time for your Dallas Cowboys news of the day after a no doubt just arduous day of pajama camp yesterday for the Dallas Cowboys. That is Dan Campbell's phrase. We'll talk more about that in just a little bit. No George Pickens at the voluntary OTAs yesterday, which I know is shocking because they're so important. And so how could you possibly survive without one?
There is nobody in DFW, maybe even the planet or the universe or the other places too, that cares about the OTAs the way Kevin does. Every single day, he comes into our pre-show meeting and sits down, and he's like, got all these news things about OTAs. And I'm like, Kevin... Really? And he's like, you know what? You're right, Corey. I'll take it easy on the OTA stuff whenever we get on air.
That's why we waited a whole hour to get to pajama camp.
It's, again, this is specifically for getting the installation started.
Sure.
Making sure, like, there's, when you have a team, I was thinking about this the other day, actually maybe on the drive-in this
morning.
How do
you get your offensive insulation set up when one of your best players is not there?
You install somebody else for the time being.
Okay.
Defensively, for this, is the defense is the most important part. But
sure.
If you want this offense to evolve, you kind of have to have that guy there, right?
Yeah.
I guess I'm going to get to him in just a minute.
Okay.
I'm going to get to him in just because I have a question there that I might be a little concerned.
Oh.
Whenever you get these guys there, there's no. I'm not sure how you put them through tough tests to start to build that unity at this point. It's like speeches, right? You're giving speeches and hoping it connects with these guys in some way. But the only real way to get that true we are a team kind of thing is to go through some tough stuff in the season and realize what you've overcome along the way and the work that you put into it actually was like a reason for the success. Right now, this is the monotony stuff, the minutia that you've got to get to the fun things. And that's just part of what OTAs are. Now, that being said, with your wide receiver, this is part one. With Pickens not being there,
yeah.
Is this just the first phase of him not showing up to things? And I think that's the big concern. But we were so concerned with him not signing the franchise tag because of what we went through with Micah.
We were
just scarred from it. And we were like, it's going to happen again. It's a Mulligata guy, and it's going to happen. He's already signed it. So,
yes.
Like, not showing up to things, that's going to be a bad thing for him, mostly.
Yeah, so I go back and forth on this because I totally get your point. On the one hand, like... You go above and beyond to show your value.
And that's what Jerry wants.
Yeah, exactly.
Jerry wants you to be the guy that's going to do stuff that you're not paid for.
But on the flip side, I'm sure George Pickens is like, look, I gave you an outstanding offensive season last year on a cheaper contract, and I think I should be rewarded accordingly. I guess my one thought would have been, and I totally understand his idea of not being out there already, my one thought would have been, if you were offered the open market to go out and see what you could find and what you could learn, and what you got back was mostly people being like, nah, I'm good, then I would have thought I would have pushed in the other direction and been like, I'll show every single one of you MFers that I am awesome and worth every single penny possible. But at least in the first day, he chose not to do that.
Yeah, and I wonder, too, if he's just resided to the fact that he's going to be a Cowboy instead of the open market. But
right.
I don't know how much that affects the Cowboys' conversation salary with him down the road.
Yeah.
Like you said, voluntary, was it June 16th is the mandatory stuff? So I will look ahead to that time. If it's mandatory and he's not showing up, that's a different concern. But it is Jerry Jones. And
it's fake voluntary, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You're supposed to be.
Yeah,
I'm with
you there.
And I see the text, what do voluntary mean? But like, that was the whole idea. It didn't work out very well for that player. Is the idea is it's voluntary and name only to skirt the CBA.
Mm-hmm. But the idea that they want is true leadership. Does all the little things and is there for everything and always building. Dak would be, you know, those kinds of ideas. And they'll use Dak like that all the time, won't they? They'll be like, well, Dak this, Dak that. Dak's the greatest leader. And which he does the professional things, doesn't he? He does those things pretty well.
And that's why he has the potential to be the MVP per Corey Majors.
Nope, no, that is definitely not per Corey Majors.
I heard it from you.
No, you didn't. You heard it from Pete Prisco.
No, I heard it from you who heard it from Pete Prisco, all right? So I mean, I know you. I trust you. So cut number 11, this audio is going to say it's from Pete Prisco, but I heard it from Corey.
Dak Prescott's going to be the MVP.
Okay.
I think Dak Prescott, again, I say it time and again every single season, he's the most underappreciated, underrated player in the National Football League. And if they had any sort of defense, he would be that much better. Every time he took the field last year, he knew he had to put up big numbers, in large part because the defense was awful. Well, I think the defense is going to be better. New coordinator, new system, better players. I love what the Cowboys did in the offseason on the defensive side of the ball. And Dak Prescott's going to roll up big numbers. They're just not going to play as free as they've had to because they won't be forced to do so. So he probably will cut down on the mistakes and still be able to put up big numbers. I think Dak Prescott has a monster year.
Now, Corey, what has led you to that belief that Dak is going to be the MVP? Was it just all the things that you were just saying?
That was Pete Prisco.
Did you tell Pete to say those things?
Why would I tell Pete anything? I've never talked to Pete Prisco.
Do I want to talk to him again?
Pete Prisco.
I get it.
Is that a kind of dude that I want to talk to? Because he has a powerful voice.
Yeah.
In the media world.
Sure.
And I'm just kind of curious. I don't disagree with a lot of the things that he said.
Yeah.
And if everything goes right, Dak absolutely has played at MVP level. I don't know if y'all know or not. A couple of years ago, he finished second in MVP voting.
Whoa.
It wasn't talked about much.
Yeah, man, that feels criminal that got underreported.
Yeah, it was almost like the Angel Reese trade.
Does the Jones family know about this?
I don't know if they do or not. We should probably send
a sexy pic.
Yeah, we should send a text. But he's right. The defense should be a little bit better. It should be a little bit better. Dude, it has...
That's not good enough, right?
It has the...
If it's a little bit better, that's not good enough for Dak to be MVP or this team to make the playoffs or anything,
right? I
think
this defense can be above average.
Ooh.
I'm not saying it can be...
I think that's a bolder pick than what Pete said.
One of the top fives, and maybe you were insinuating the Browns need to be a top five team. But I don't think it's going to be a top five yet, but it can be a little bit better, and that might put you at mediocre.
Yeah.
But last year, that's all we asked for was be a mediocre defense consistently, and this team's doing a lot of different things. And if that's the case, maybe Dak doesn't have to have 5,000 yards.
Sure.
But he still can.
Yeah.
And this offense is built and constructed in a way that you can have some massive big plays. That Washington game where you just obliterated them on Christmas, you can do that again over and over if your defense is pretty good.
Now, the MVP odds that I saw, keep in mind, I saw these about an hour before the Myles Garrett trade yesterday.
Okay.
A lot of familiar faces. Josh Allen leading the way, 6-1. Lamar, 7-1. Drake May, 8.5-1. Burrow, 9.5-1. And Mahomes, 10-1. Then Justin Herbert's at 11-1, and Dak is 7th on the list at 12-1, followed by Stafford, Love, and Caleb Williams. One would think perhaps Matthew Stafford would move up just because this feels like a you play quarterback for the team with one of the best records awards,
yeah,
as opposed to just MVP. But if you think Dak is going to be in the mix, I know I'm kidding about you and what Pete Prisco said, 12-1 feels like a very good value if that's something that folks out there believe could happen.
This person is absolutely correct, though, Kevin, and I think you and I have discussed this at length. We have questions of why. From the 469, Dak needs to be better in the red zone.
Big facts. So this is one of the things that annoys me.
He could obliterate some records if he is.
I agree. It annoys me when people strictly talk about how good the offense was as a monolith because they look at the overall stats. That is something that is easy and at times lazy. Go into those games. There were at least two, maybe more games that, sure, your defense sucked last year, and I agree to that. But if you're better in the red zone, you still win that game, even with an incompetent defense last year. So that is something that needs to be significantly better.
And recently, Shoddy did discuss that too, and how that was a shortcoming of their offense last year, and you know, established that there probably needs to be some different kind of play calling, a little bit more study on what they need to do better there. And maybe if it's running the ball more effectively in there, maybe that could be the thing. It takes away from some stats. Who cares about that when you're winning games?
Yes.
But I think this offense is designed to have some big numbers offensively, whether it be in the running game or the passing game. That's going to come. You have the talent to do it. That's the thing, too. When you don't have the talent, you see the result on the other side of the football last year. Not having the talent, not good enough. No matter what the coaching, your talent wasn't good enough last year. If you have the talent, which you saw offensively, you can do what they did. And if they have the talent defensively, they can be one of those teams, Kevin, that puts their quarterback in the conversation because of their record.
Now, God, this stat can't be true, but I think it is, and it makes me so sad. Since he arrived at the 2024 trade deadline, Jonathan Mingo has 6 catches for 21 yards.
Go.
And no touchdowns.
Was that all in one game? Or
that feels like a subpar game, let alone a season and a half for a 4th-round pick. Anyways, what would be your idealized version? Like, assuming Pickens is there, because I know at OTAs, hey, no Pickens gives everybody an opportunity, or maybe you think Valdes-Scantling or Tyler Johnson get more of an opportunity, like, early on to get their foot in the door heading into training camp. What would be your idealized top 4 or 5 wide receivers? Like, I'm assuming we're all on the same page. CeeDee and Pickens, 1 and 2, or if you want to flip them, doesn't matter to me. Then from there.
Quite honestly, Kevin, past 3, do not care.
Okay.
Jake Ferguson is my next receiver. And now, we can have the conversation for the sake of it, but your first 3 receivers are really good.
Yeah.
CeeDee Lamb, I think, is a great receiver. George Pickens is a great receiver. Ryan Flannoy is coming on.
And you feel good with him at wide receiver 3?
Absolutely.
I know what you said about Ferguson.
Absolutely.
But okay.
No, beyond 3.
Okay.
Ferguson's my
whatever.
4th.
Yeah.
But I think that those 3, as long as they stay healthy, you have one of the most, if not the most lethal trio of receivers running around on the field. And I'll take that any day with Dak out there and the Javonte Williams running back situation. I'm not a huge fan of Valdes-Scantling. I don't want Turpin focused too much on being a receiver. And when it comes to Jonathan Mingo, I got question marks. So I like what I saw in Anthony Smith. That's going to be one of those guys. And quite honestly, I kind of like Trayshon Holden too. With Anthony Smith, when I was watching him, did you get a chance to get your eyeballs on him, Alec?
A little bit.
He had some qualities I really liked about him. But again, you go up against the competition he's going up against, and you're like, okay, is that just him abusing bad competition? But he is a – remember when – was it Thrasher or something like that? We had a dude that everybody was really excited about, and we were like, is he really going to make this team, though?
You're right.
And then it turned out, no, he didn't. It might be one of those where he's around because he was a draft pick, but we really are just focused on those first three. But Valdez-Scantling he'll have some really good moments where something good could have happened and he dropped it.
So essentially, are all the wide receivers fighting for one spot?
Yes.
And then could you possibly envision a scenario in which the Cowboys kind of follow that logic of, hey, you sort of dropped off a little bit in the return game, so Kamonte Turpin, we're not going to really use you as much as a wide receiver? Or would that just be insanity for the way the Cowboys roll because they already view it as a 2-1 roster spot?
Oh, yeah. No, that's probably the way that they
view it. So you don't see any way in which they're like,
he's there.
Okay.
And right. I can't say that Anthony Smith is fighting Valdez-Scantling, but I would see them keeping 5, not 6.
Okay.
That's just because I honestly think that you're still trying to figure out your depth at running back right now, and that might be a big factor for you, but I just don't see any reason, aside from injury, for you to keep 6 right now.
Do you guys see a world in which Jonathan Mingo doesn't make this team? His cap hit is negligible. It's $1.1 million. You would just have to be admitting that that was a stupid trade.
I mean, he is one of the best blocking wide receivers out there, Kevin.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's great. I've said this many times. I do not want a wide receiver whose primary focus is blocking. If we get to the point, this feels like that stupid, was it the 09 draft when we're like, oh, he's going to be our cold weather kicker. Fine. If we go 17-0 and you're like, we really need to fine tune a spot, there's Jonathan Mingo. I want a wide receiver that can catch a pass.
Here's the thing that I'm actually, I'm very interested in. Will anybody look at what the Rams did last year with their 13 personnel?
And just load up on tight
end. And say, Kevin, you got Ferguson, Schoonmaker, Spanford, Princeton, Fant, Michael Trigg. I know DJ Rogers exists too, but that Michael Trigg addition is interesting. And with the way they seem to like Spanford, would it make sense for you to say, you know what, if we want to make our offense more explosive out of the run game as well, there are lots of elements that we can create in this to build really good plays from the tight ends as well as what our receivers can do?
100%. I would rather the Cowboys carry 4 tight ends than that extra wide receiver, especially since Turpin is, you know, dual positioning it up. Fine. Lamb, Pickens, Turpin, Flannoy, and then let the rest fight it out for one spot and give me that 4th tight end.
From the 2-1-4, with Turpin's speed, you'd be a fool to take him off the field. It's just not
if it's impacting the return game. I don't agree with that.
Like, he just doesn't make it. They don't have enough impact plays for him.